I am Conor MacLeod of the Clan MacLeod, and I am immortal.
Looking for a dead guy named Nash.
You talk funny, Nash. Where are you from?
Lots of different places.
I am Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez, chief metallurgist to King Charles V of Spain.
Well, everybody's got their problems.
You're alive. Why didn't you die?
Hey, it's a kind of magic.
Hi, I'm Candy.
Of course you are.
Hello and welcome to Another Time MacLeod, the only podcast to our knowledge to go through that wonderful 1986 film Highlander, scene by wonderful scene. I am your host, Rob Daniel, and I'm joined, as always, by my kinsman, Mr. Rob Wallace.
And as always, it's a divine delight to be here.
Well, it is a divine delight because we are standing in the shadow of St. Augustine Church in Kilburn, which is where they filmed the scene where Connor is reunited with the Kurgan. It's locked up. It seems as if the Philharmonic have been doing something in there because they are moving all of their instruments out and putting them on the back of a truck. So we can't get into the church, but we are standing in the shade of the building and the trees around it. So it's nice. It's hot, isn't it, Robert?
Yeah, I think this is the hottest day, I think, on record until tomorrow.
That's right. We're in the middle of a heat wave. There's been a strong urging from the authorities not to travel, but to show just how committed we are to bringing you some Highlander goodness, we have travelled to North London to stand in the shade of a closed church to talk about the scene from Highlander that we're talking about today.
Yes, we're on a mission from God.
We are on a mission from God. And to use the correct meteorological term, it is hotter than a motherfuck right now. It is hot, hot, hot. It is 20 to 7 in the evening and it's 35 degrees Celsius, so
totally normal weather, normal and cool. Yep,
cool. Absolutely. Cool. Right, well, let's, without any further ado, let's get on to the show. So what is the time code we're talking about today? Sorry.
The time code we're talking about today is 1 hour 28 minutes 40 seconds to 1 hour 32 minutes and 53 seconds, or 1:28:40 to 1:32:53.
So it's quite a chunky scene that we're doing today, but this is the whole scene from when the Kurgan walks into the church, isn't it? And has the exchange back and forth with Connor. Some things are revealed. The Kurgan proves himself to be quite disrespectful of being in a holy place, although it's Connor who does at one point look like he's going to fight on holy ground. But yes, that's the scene we're talking about. So what did we think of it?
Well, it's a great scene. It was really rewarding, or at least I found on this occasion, just sitting and watching it as a single kind of unit within, you know, the whole structure of the film. Because for a 5-minute sequence, I don't have that many notes. Not because it was, you know, again, not because there's not stuff to talk about, but because it's actually, I think, dramatically quite straightforward. And it doesn't have a lot of tangents. It's got, you know, it's very focused.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, it's been a while since we've just had a scene which is just two characters having a conversation that's entirely character-based and isn't exposition.
Yeah, this is a scene that pays off a lot of what we've seen up until this point. Like the fact that Heather was raped by the Kurgan, so that gets returned to the fact that... but it's also something with the fact that the Kurgan has gone into hiding with his wonderful disguise, which is a shaved head and...
A not particularly well-shaved head.
No, it's really, really messy, isn't it? And he's got his safety pins in the scar around his throat. We've just followed on from the fact that we've seen that Connor lights a candle every day on Heather's birthday.
For you, my bunny Heather. Happy birthday.
Which again adds like a poignancy to this scene that it's on Heather's birthday that he finds out that she was raped by the Kurgan. And the Kurgan just does bring the bad stuff, which actually is...
Heather's birthday being, I think, April 4th? If it's the day after the previous scene where we saw the newspaper.
Right. On the previous episode, did we think that it was the same day?
It might be this. Actually, do you know what? It probably is the same day. So yeah, so let's say April 3rd.
Yeah, I don't think there's any reason to suggest that it would be the next day in this scene. But also, of course, this sets up the final confrontation between them. This is the one conversation they have to, not to settle scores, but just to be introduced before they face off against each other.
Which is clearly why the rule about not fighting on holy ground is in the film.
Yes.
It's because you have to find a space where these two characters can have a conversation that they're not going to be trying to kill each other.
That's right, yeah. And that's very elegantly done, actually. And it's good that it's the Kurgan that brings him up on it, because it looks like Connor's going to kick off when he finds out what happened to Heather. Because the Kurgan's been very cruel and also goads him about it as well. So that's... And yeah, just that little bit of a character touch that the Kurgan isn't going to break that rule is really nicely done as well.
Especially because they're the last two left now. They're the final two left. So you'd assume if there's any time you're going to break it, now's the...
Yeah, indeed, that's right. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens. Because we have talked in the past, haven't we, about what happens if you do fight on holy ground, but we've only speculated because it's never been in any other...
I think in the wider canon, it's implied there are consequences. I think Pompeii was actually meant to be, you know, the eruption of Vesuvius.
Oh, well.
Like, you know, so natural cataclysmic disasters may occur.
Oh, wow, okay. That was slightly outside the scope of the budget for this film then. But yeah, like you, I just really enjoyed watching this scene. One, because on the Blu-ray, but also remember when we saw it at the BFI in that 4K restoration, this is just a handsomely shot scene. This is, it looks gorgeous. I mean, the interior of the church that we're standing next to is really striking. I mean, it is a church, so St. Augustine is a church, but it's kind of affectionately known as the Cathedral of North London because it is big. And we got some church bells going. That's nice.
Quarter to the hour.
It is, that's right. So it is a Anglican church, so Church of England, so not Catholic like it is in the film. And it is impressive. I mean, half of it is currently covered in scaffolding and plastic sheeting.
All buildings of historical significance in London seem to be.
Yeah, so we're going to have to take the contemporary 18th century historian Edward Wolford's word for it, that it is one of the finest examples of ecclesiastical structures in London. Now, the front is very nice.
Yeah, it's a little bit grimy, but then again, it is a church in North London. The windows could definitely do with a clean.
They could. And it's also right next to a road, so yeah, that's presumably a lot of fumes are smeeching up the windows. But yeah, this was a really, really nicely shot scene. The colours in this are very nice. It's really, the film stock really, really brings out the colours. So you've got a really nice splash of red from the statue of the Virgin Mary from her dress. And there's quite a nice kind of blue tinge to the windows and to the stonework. And the flesh tones in this scene are really, really nice as well. Particularly some gorgeous close-ups of Christophe Lambert. I mean, he gives good glower in this.
Yeah, because it gives the impression of being candlelit, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. That's right. There's, yeah, you're absolutely right. That's what they were going for, I would imagine.
Because, yeah, it opens with, you know, Connor looking solemn and sad, and you've got the back of his head, the shot that we're opening this with, and it pulls focus on to reveal the lower half of the Kurgan, and you've got his chainmail. You can see the chainmail around his arm, and his feet are stomping, and he kind of staggers over to the cross. He loosely crosses himself. He kneels as if in prayer, and then he pats out all the candles, you know, really childishly, really maliciously. And just chuckles to himself. And you've got all the nuns turning to look at him and one of the parishioners, and it keeps on that low angle as he's chuckling. Again, it's another villain intro. Every time they introduce the Kurgan, it's like they're introducing a new character.
Yeah, I was thinking that. I thought this could be the intro to the Kurgan again. He always gets a grand entrance, whatever scene is in. There's also, I just like the fact that he always has to kill something, even if it's symbolically. So he goes into the church and just snuffs out the candles. Each one, of course, yeah, lit for a departed soul, but it's like none of that. There's some nice ADRing of the as he snuffs it out as well. And it's good, yeah, that the nuns, I mean, you could say they seem to sense a disturbing presence, but he does look terrifying when he walks in.
He's all just also just an arsehole snuffing out all the candles. He's also just,
and he's not being discreet in terms of how he's swaggering about either.
Yeah, and you've got Connor staring very intensely, and it's clear that he knows the Kurgan's there. And the Kurgan, you know, like slumps down in the seat behind him, you know, Castagir is gone, only you and I remain.
Castagir is gone, only you and I remain.
And Lambert is great in this because he's got such withering contempt.
Yes.
Nice to see you, Kurgan. Who cuts your hair?
I am in disguise.
Nice to see you, Kurgan. Who cuts your hair? I am in disguise.
Although, This is a disguise which is anything more obvious or more going to draw more attention to itself than previously, because again he's shaved his head really badly. It's definitely like a strip of hair at the back that's still hanging there.
Yeah.
And he's got that tattoo on his scalp that seems to be a dragon.
Yeah, and I wondered if that, because that kind of reminded me though of the skull helmet that he wears when we first see him.
Mm.
And I wondered if it's like, as we talked about in that episode oh so many weeks ago or months ago, if that's something that he killed that became extinct or something like that. And did he actually slay a dragon at some point? Was what I was kind of thinking there with what that might denote. But yeah, it is one of those things where he now looks more like the police sketch of him on the front of the newspaper.
And he did previously.
That's right. So it is one of those things where it's like, no one's seen the front of the New York Post, because clearly there are many, many people here who might say, oh, that looks a bit like the headhunter that's been terrorizing New York City. But anyway.
And yeah, he's like, well, this way no one will recognize me. And Connor's like, I do, except less Englishly.
This way no one will recognize me.
I do.
And then Clancy Brown the Kurgan kind of shrugs it off. He's so smug. He's so matter of fact. And like, this is definitely the Kurgan at his most relaxed,
yeah,
in terms of like, oh, you know, it's not, he's obviously got his meditative stuff in his room when he's spinning the sword, but this is him, he's really at ease. He thinks the prize is basically his. And but also it's like, is this, you know, for example, when he does the amazing happy Halloween, ladies, you know, he tells Connor to what, which gives you an idea that a lot of this is being done for McCloud's benefit. Is his being a creep largely just a psychological game?
Happy Halloween, ladies!
I think it could be one of those things, because, yeah, I do... I also made a note of just how wonderfully nonchalant he is in this scene. Yeah. Considering this is what they have been living lifetime upon lifetime for, this is the final two. The prize is within his reach. And he goes along, yeah, looking like he's psyching him out.
Yeah.
The way that Arnold Schwarzenegger... Because, of course, this Kurgan definitely owes a debt to the look of the Terminator. But Arnold Schwarzenegger, when he would go to Mr. Universe competitions, would just do that to his closest competitors, would just have breakfast with them. And I think in Pumping Iron, the 1977 film, there's a scene when he has breakfast with Lou Ferrigno and basically says, yeah, I called my mum and told her I'd already won because, well, it's obvious I'm going to win, isn't it? Anyway.
I called my mother yesterday already and I said I won. She says, congratulations, Arnold, you know.
And he's just basically been a real arsehole, to the point where I think on the audio commentary, years later, Schwarzenegger kind of tried to pull that back a bit in terms of, well, that's just what we did then. But it's like,
you're the only one doing it, Arnold.
You did it the best, Arnold. You really did it the best. But yeah, but I think that's what the Kurgan's doing here, because I do love that shrug he gives when, this way no one will recognize me. I do. Just gives that shrug.
Well, that's the thing, you know, when he says, even when he says nuns, no sense of humour, there's a real irony to it.
Nuns, no sense of humour.
In a way that, you know, and they were they actual?
Oh, no, sorry, they are nuns, but I assume that they were costumed actors.
That's why I was confused, because it's like, it's not a Catholic church. It's like, did they import the nuns?
Yes. Well, I don't think that they would actually be able to get them, because as Russell Mulcahy says on the audio commentary for this, they had trouble actually getting a church that would let them shoot inside because of the content, because of the tongue flicking at the nuns and the licking of the priest's hand. Lots of churches said no, but St. Augustine, I think, as we mentioned in the previous episode, was financially strapped. So said, yep, that's fine. You can shoot here and do that this church.
It's ultimately a parable about good triumphing over evil, especially if you look at the whole tongue thing. You can say that's very serpentine,
yeah, absolutely.
The biblical connotations of the devil. And, you know, ultimately he is defeated.
That's right. And also when he licks the priest's hand, it's like, well that is a defilement, right? Yeah. But he's clearly coded as a bad guy here. Yeah. So it's like, and he's, as you said, there's definitely a whiff of sulfur about him in this particular scene. But I do like the way that he is nonchalant, but then he will get really serious. This is another scene in this film that has some of the best lines of dialogue, right? In my all-time favourite lines of dialogue, like, nuns, no sense of humour. But also, you will always be weaker than I. That's such an...
You say it to me a lot, Rob. It's quite hurtful.
That's not true. It's a rush to see who can say it to who first. It's 50-50 at this point.
You are weak, I am. You will always be weaker than I.
the out front.
Ramirez's blade did not cut. I've lost the accent. Ramirez's blade did not cut me deeply enough. He's right about you. You're slime.
Yeah, that's great. You're slime.
Slime is such an 80s insult as well, isn't it?
It really is.
Ramirez's blade did not cut deeply enough. He was right about you. You're slime.
Yeah, and I think that Clancy Brown, I mean, obviously, yeah, we've mentioned before that he was interested in playing the Kurgan as more of a sophisticate, more of someone who's more intelligent, but in this scene, I think he does a very good job of showing the intelligence
and the calculation.
And the calculation behind the Halloween theatrics. But he does, yeah, you can see that he's also taken direction, because when he leaves the church at the end of this scene, he is giving full on, like, yeah, boogeyman as he walks out and is clearly really camping it up, and I would imagine he's following direction there. But yeah, I do think this is the best scene with Clancy Brown in terms of just showing what a great performer
he
is.
It's one of Lambert's best scenes as well, because the part where, the extent to which he underplays it when he kind of learns about Heather, and yeah, you just see it in his eyes, and you just kind of see him take that on board and start processing it.
I see. Ramirez lied. She was not his woman. She was your woman.
And he's obviously furious, and the Kurgan goads him, you know, I see Ramirez lies. And really obviously trying to provoke him.
Yeah.
And then Connor, you know, perhaps I gave her something you never could, and secretly she longed for my return. And then the
proper bad guy, and his proper bad guy dialogue, that is. Yeah. It's like, what a cad.
Perhaps I gave her something you never could, and secretly she yearned for my return.
And Connor grabs the Kurgan's jacket, and it looks sweaty. It looks like that was a hot day as well, doesn't it?
Yes, it really does. And that's also a really good shot when you kind of get that low angle shot looking up at the Kurgan. Yeah, indeed. That is a really, really good shot there.
But also, that shot is weird, because that shot interrupts the Connor grabbing him and him delivering the line. And then you get that shot. And then all of a sudden he stands up and goes, "Holy ground, Highlander!" As though he's only just been grabbed. It's like he's been grabbed and there's a delayed reaction.
Holy ground, Highlander! Remember what Ramirez taught you.
I kind of took that. I know what you mean. And there are some things in this, because Russell Mulcahy, again, on the audio commentary, points out that the scene breaks the 180-degree rule.
So yeah,
it kind of crosses the line sometimes, which is one of those that it does. But then I think in terms of, you know, the emotion of the scene, those shots actually add something. It kind of keeps you off kilter a little bit. And that scene, when he gets grabbed and says something else and then stands up and says, "Holy ground, Highlander," is one of those that it's like, I wasn't sure if that was like a delayed reaction or if it was just, I'm just going to finish what I'm going to say and then I'm going to call you up on what you're doing. Because you don't ever really think that the Kurgan is not in control of this situation.
He looks really grumpy when he says, "Remember what Ramirez taught you."
Yeah.
He looks just a bit like, almost a bit put out. Almost a bit like, "Can't believe he did that."
Yeah, I think it's, again, you could say that's because it's getting towards the end of the scene and they need it to have that dramatic, yeah, got an element to it. But yes, he does give good ground. But there's one line of dialogue that I completely forgotten about that is so brilliant, that Christoph Lambert says, when he says, "You will always be weaker than I." And I think that Connor then says,
"I'll be out front."
That's right. And it's like,
"I'll be out front."
And he grabs his chin when he says it.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he? It's really, and I wonder if that was something that wasn't rehearsed, if that was just something in the moment, because the Kurgan, as played by Clancy Brown, so Clancy Brown does look quite annoyed that that's happened, as in, yeah, his portrayal of the Kurgan, but "I'll be out front," as in, let's just get this sorted and done now. And it's the Kurgan who kind of says, "We'll meet again soon enough."
"Goodbye, MacLeod. We will meet soon enough."
Which kind of makes you think that the Kurgan's really, really been longing for this moment, wanting it to be MacLeod, and then isn't going to just do it outside of some church. He's going to do it in a place that is that has a certain spectacle to it, like the Silver Cup building.
Yeah, so I'm currently trying to look up the name of the actor who plays the priest, because I don't remember if I was able to find it.
"It's the house of God. People are trying to pray. You're disturbing them."
Oh, Peter Banks.
Okay, and what's he been in?
Peter Banks has been in...
Well, actually, while you're doing that, I'm just going to quickly say that the shot where the Kurgan licks the priest's hand, the priest is played by Peter Banks, was cut from the American version of the film.
Well, yes, because I guess it's... It's heretical, I guess?
It would be...
It's not blasphemy.
It's not blasphemy.
It might be both, actually.
Is it heresy to lick a priest's hand? I mean, it's a defilement, but it's not kind of going against
the church. It's going against the church.
It is, yeah, but it's like, no, but it's, yeah, I'm not entirely sure what the proper definition is, because in this, of course, it's suggested that the Kurgan has a theological interest in Jesus.
Well, yeah, because he's kind of going, he cares for these mortals? Of course, he died for our sins. That would be his undoing.
Yeah.
He cares about these helpless mortals.
Of course he cares. He died for our sins.
That shall be his undoing.
Which is, it's like, so the sequel to this, if the Kurgan had won, should have been the Kurgan fighting God, right? Like the Saint of Killers from
Preacher.
From Preacher.
Yes. Well, I would have watched that. That scene also reminded me a little bit. I thought that in that moment, the Kurgan had a touch of General Zod about him.
Yeah.
When talking about Superman. And he says, this Superman is nothing of the sort. I've discovered his weakness. He cares for these humans.
This Superman is nothing of the kind. I've discovered his weakness.
Yes.
He cares. He actually cares for these Earth people.
Like pets.
I suppose so.
Peter Banks, who plays the priest, was born in Canada, and another North American continent import. You know, his career started with Carry On England in 1976.
Wow. Okay.
And yeah, he's in Highlander. He's one of those kind of jobbing actors. Yeah, he was in the Famous Five. He was in. He's done some various murder mystery things. The thing that he was in most recently was he played Dr. Shepard in Day of the Moon. Which, I just don't know,
could that be an episode of a certain sci-fi series about a time traveller who seems to have some kind of medical degree?
You might be correct.
Yes. We have to get a properly earned Doctor Who reference into every episode from now on, see how long we can keep this one going, because these are not forced. That is true.
That is the thing he's done most recently, which suggests he retired in 2011.
Rightio.
But yeah, he's good in this. He's got a real sense of like dignity and decency to him. And the novelization, I can't remember exactly what terms it, but the novelization kind of stresses that he's being quite brave here, because there's a leather-bound massive thug who he may or may not recognize as being the headhunter.
Yeah.
Sticking his feet up in the church and laughing. And yeah, and obviously the Kurgan then grabs his hand and goes, "Father, forgive me. I am a worm."
"Father, forgive me. I am a worm."
That's a great line of dialogue. Again, that's one of these things where there are just so many great lines of dialogue in this particular scene. And that's another great one. Also, of course, he ends with a great one. "I have something to say. It's better to burn out than to fade away." Which is like, the Kurgan has never really suggested that he's that sort of person that would just say that, but it is a great ending to the scene.
"I have something to say. It's better to burn out than to fade away."
Yeah, and I think that might be a Neil Young lyric, which feels a little bit out of character.
"Rock and roll is here to stay. It's better to burn out than to fade away."
Yeah, it seems very out of character. I mean, it would be like, it's almost like a Black Sabbath lyric or something. It seems as if the Kurgan would be much more into heavy metal, particularly satanic metal, but...
Well, as we've established, there is only one band in the Highlander universe.
Well, that's true, actually. Yes, it's obviously a Queen lyric. That's a very good point.
Yeah, and it was also... It was... that's what it was... What year did Kurt Cobain die?
94.
Okay, because that was in his suicide letter.
Oh, wow, okay.
So, did he get that from Neil Young, or did he get that from Highlander?
We'll never know, but... But if anyone out there does know, then write us in.
I'm just reading little snippets on Google, and then it says, it seemed like an overreaction when Young announced he'd never play that song again. So that's probably from the song, and that's probably, I'm guessing, I'm connecting snippets that I'm reading on Google from unrelated articles and coming up with a narrative, but that would seem to be the case.
Unless Neil Young was a little bit presumptuous there and had not seen the 1986 classic Highlander.
And,
well, quite fittingly for today, it being early evening and 35 degrees in the Celsius, this scene... So Ross Mulcahy says between takes on this scene, they would just run out and have ice cream. So that sounds lovely. He says this was all filmed. So that whole scene was filmed in one day. And apparently it was just one of the easiest scenes to film. It was like, it seemed like a really, really easy, nice and fun one to do that everyone, yeah, seemed to be in on what they needed to do, which is good because that does come across on screen in terms of just how good the performances are. And yeah, one thing on the Wikipedia page is that, so the Wikipedia page for St. Augustine Church mentions the fact that young Sherlock Holmes was filmed here when the priest who has been spiked with a hallucinogen then
hallucinates the knight coming out of the stained glass window.
That's right. But it doesn't make any reference to the fact that Highlander was filmed here. So we might have to update the Wikipedia page. Yeah, indeed, the Wikipedia page to write that gross, terrible wrong. Because it is definitely, because the lovely images on the Wikipedia page like that is definitely where they filmed Highlander. And yeah, the church is very famous for a very large spire. And it is an impressive spire, isn't it? We'll have to get a picture of that before we go. But yeah, so I was trying to think, is there anything else here? I mean, I think one thing is that on the Blu-ray, it'd be interesting to see if it's even clear on the 4K, but you can spot the join on the bold cap that Francis Brown's wearing, and also the throat scar does look a little bit like, gotta say that that's a prosthetic, but that's fine. So is there anything else to say about this really quite wonderful scene?
No, I think we've pretty much covered it. I'm just doing a little bit of last minute research on St. Augustine, but yeah, he was involved in campaigns in Roman Africa. He was killed in the Siege of Hippo. So, I don't know if we're going to read. Maybe the Kurgan was there. Maybe that's the...
Yeah, that's right. That's what he was there as well. I'm trying to think, was there anything else in that scene that I really liked? No, I think we've covered it all. Okay then. Well, whew, it is warm. But before we sign off, Rob, if people wanted to... Ooh, it might be 7 o'clock.
I have a yearning to go inside.
One thing though, that I was going to say, there are so many options for what to call this episode. Nuns, no sense of humour.
I am a worm.
I am in disguise. It's better to burn out.
To fade away.
Yep. You will always be weaker than I. I mean, there are just great lines of dialogue in this.
I'll probably end up calling it something that's random and an in-joke from what we discussed in the episode, and people will be like, what the fuck is that?
That's right. Or as actually as...
You're sworn on church grounds.
Yeah. So you're going to burn in motherfucking hell. Actually, I did say it's hotter than a motherfucker earlier, so now I can't seem to stop saying fuck. With church bells ringing in the background.
Forgive me, Rob. I am a worm.
Keeps on saying that.
It's so much fun to say. Friend of the podcast, Adrian, when he was on a few episodes ago, did suggest that we should call this one Licking the Priest. So
and that does sound like a Black Sabbath album.
It does indeed. Or at least a track, opening track on the album of the same title. I will leave it up to you. I'm sure whatever you choose will be properly...
Priest liquor.
priest liquor, that's great. Priest liquor. They then started a hardcore thrash band, opening track, Nuns, No Sense of Humour. Anyway, so enough of this diabolical foolishness. Rob, if people wanted to find you on the internet, where could they do that?
You can find me on Twitter at Robert M. Wallace. You can also find my writing at Of All The Film Sites, www.ofallthefilmsites.com. Rob and I also co-host another pod dedicated more generally to film, which is called The Movie Robcast. And you can find that wherever you listen to this, or follow that online on Twitter at Movie Robcast.
Brilliant, thank you very much. Always like the way that you give a little chuckle when you mention the Movie Robcast as well, as it is, I don't know, we are so proud to have two. We are vainglorious to have not one podcast, but two.
But I like the idea of listeners yo-yoing from one to the other. It's like...
Yeah. Thank you very much. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I am at @Rob_A_Daniel. You can find my writing, more church bells, at electric-shadows.com, filmstories.co.uk, lovehorror.co.uk. More important...
That's quite actually getting quite alarming at this point. That's like end of days...
I think that they've seen the parts of London have just burst into flames, and now that's just a fire bell ringing.
It's getting louder.
It is getting louder.
And Leon's getting large.
Jesus, is why you thrust yourself into my head again. I was just trying to say that before. I just don't think I was going to get that. Exactly what I was thinking.
Bad news. Fog is getting thicker.
And Leon's getting larger.
They're simpatico, then they're just like, everyone else can see him, right?
It's so hot that our consciousnesses have just melded.
Melded, that's right.
keeps feeling like it's about to stop, and then it starts again. I think somebody's listening to us, and they've got quite a...
Absolutely. Okay, that seems to be the end. If you rang again, that would be brilliant. Okay, right. So Rob just had to cut around a lot of church bells there. So if there is suddenly the church bells have just stopped, that's because he had to edit that bit, not because they stopped very quickly, because, boy, they did not stop quickly. They went on and on and on, to the point where we thought it was just a fire alarm. More importantly, though, if you want to follow this podcast on Twitter, you can at McLeod Time.
I'd have to leave the full thing.
You can cut around it a little bit. You could do that at McLeod Time. And if you want to write us a Highlander-themed email about if those were real nuns or not, then you can do that at whowantstopodforever@gmail.com. And if you've liked what you've heard today... And please say yes, because we are literally sweltering here, sweating in this baking heat to bring you our thoughts in the shadows of the Highlander Church. Then please rate and review us wherever you listen to this podcast. It is always appreciated, and it does help the podcast in terms of all those rankings and whatnot. So, once more, Rob, thank you very much.
And thank you very much.
And Bells, thank you very much. That would have been so excellent. I think we got a cough instead, so that's fine. And thank you all for listening. And until next time...
Another time, McLeod!
Another time, McLeod!